The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse.
The beast.
We're told in the book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan. Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other, I will oppose you.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
From the heartland of America, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert, and welcome to our humble bunker, everybody. We hope you're feeling well this week. We are on the mend, at least I am. So far, Derek has not gotten sick. Yay!
I have no idea how that happened, but I am thankful for it.
Amen, brother.
As we come to you on October 23rd of 2011, breaking news. Yes.
Blake, get over here.
Yes. Totally derailed the train. Turkey, a serious earthquake in Turkey, magnitude 7.2 reported by the U.S. Geological Survey, and dozens of deaths, at least 65, perhaps more, some 300, over 300. I had the little thing here on my iPhone.
I know, you had to lean back there to get it.
Yeah, and forgot that it was still attached to the USB cable. 138 people as of the time we go to press here, we're just after 5 o'clock Central Time, which is GMT minus 6, over 138 killed and 350 injured. This is eastern Turkey, the area near Lake Van.
Well, since the 7.2 happened, there have been a couple of dozen easily sizable aftershocks, one a 6.0. That just happened a few minutes ago.
So file this under earth changes and earthquakes in diverse places on your prophetic calendar. So that is a breaking story. Obviously, there's more news that will be coming out about that you can catch from the mainstream sources, but just wanted to pass that along if you've not heard it yet. Other things to discuss. Boy, a lot going on around the world this week.
There's just so much to talk about.
Well, and we missed a week, so we did.
We missed last week.
We did. You were.
Was I sick?
Or did we post?
I can't remember. Honestly, I thought we did one last week, but don't ask me.
Well, I'm missing time now. Oh my goodness! Just flying without a map here.
Looks like a spy thriller.
We did a show last week. Okay.
Oh, see, there you go.
Was I not as crazy as I?
No, actually, I did the show by myself. I just made up your voice.
Well, there's more that, and maybe we should save this for later in the show because I've got a lot of stuff to talk about. The deployment of special forces to Uganda and Central Africa. Just did an interview a couple hours ago with Tony Kale, which will be posted at A View from the Bunker by the time you hear this, vftb.net, about the Lord's Resistance Army, which is the group that our special forces have been deployed to contain.
Now it's 150 armed advisors.
Yes, armed advisors.
Take my advice.
Yeah.
Or you will regret it.
Yeah, but
In other words, they're training military.
That's right.
They're advising on military strategy.
In the same sense that the 1,000 advisors that President Kennedy sent to Vietnam weren't supposed to actually shoot back.
Exactly.
Unless attacked first. And, of course, we know how that played out. So we just pray this does not lead to an extended military adventure in Africa, but I think it will. Hey, we've already got a base in Africa anyway. You know, the Horn of Africa, U.S. AFRICOM, will soon, I predict, have headquarters in Africa. In fact, there's a story out of Somalia. I'll just transition into that story, that the U.S. or possibly France or perhaps both are already engaged in the conflict in Somalia. According to military spokesman in Kenya, Major Emmanuel Chircher, he said that the U.S. or France, possibly both, have stepped up airstrikes in Somalia in the past few days as Kenyan forces are advancing toward a stronghold held by the rebel group called Shabab. So,
Al-Shabaab.
Well, you've noticed a trend. And see, this is from New York Times, and the New York Times is doing this. They're dropping the L from Al-Qaeda. They're just calling it Qaeda.
I noticed
that. And Al-Shabaab apparently is now just Shabaab. Why is the L being dropped? I don't
Is
know.
Is it like Shaboom?
Well, if you're in the wrong place, it
yes,
could be.
Shabab could be Shaboom. Shaboom, yes.
But I don't know why they're doing that. This is something I've noticed in New York Times in recent months. Al-Qaeda instead of Al-Qaeda and Shabab instead of Al-Shabab. But
I don't know.
Kenyan forces are inside Somalia trying to take out this military stronghold, this militant stronghold rather, and they're claiming that French and or U.S. forces are engaged in the fight as well, but neither France or the U.S. has confirmed that.
Oh, listen, they didn't confirm that they were on the ground in Libya for weeks.
Exactly my point. You know, so Libya, the Libyan adventure is over, so now we got to move on to something else. So Somalia, we got Yemen, we got perhaps Pakistan.
Aren't you glad that we've got a Peace Prize winning president
yeah,
in office?
I guess. And maybe he's trying to live up to it now with his withdrawal from Iraq. That's the other big news this week.
Oh, the big news also, as you told me earlier, is it's more that we get to be out of Iraq by the end of the year. Mm-hmm. We've been told to get off our own bases.
Yeah, that's something that's really interesting. And it's interesting watching the political fight over the announcement. Republicans are saying that this is a bad idea because it leaves the field open in that area, in Iraq now, for Iran. And to that, we say, duh!
Look, these are two countries that fought each other for years!
Yes, but that's when the country was headed up by a secular Sunni Muslim,
yes.
Saddam Hussein.
Yes.
The country, Iraq, is a majority Shia.
Yes.
And as we have said on PID Radio for years now, if we let this country vote and create its own constitution and vote in representative elections on a Western model, the country will become, the government of this of Iraq will be represented primarily by Shia politicians.
Yeah, think?
And the Constitution, which we've already seen, will incorporate Sharia law into the Constitution, which they've already done. The Christian population of Iraq has been demolished, destroyed. Saddam Hussein was a bad guy, but he kept the sectarian violence, he kept a lid on
mm-hmm.
it. And Christians were basically left alone. They were still a small minority of the population, but now they're essentially non-existent in Iraq because the Muslims are free to behave as they would without a strong man at the top, you know, keeping everyone under his thumb.
Well, it's the Egyptian model. In many ways, Mubarak sort of kept a lid
yes.
on the anti-Christian activities.
Right.
Now, the Christians weren't treated, you know, they were made to live in garbage dumps. I realize that. I know that they weren't living a picnic life.
Right.
But they weren't being beheaded.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And now we're seeing stories of the Coptic Christians in Egypt mm-hmm. Being persecuted, physically assaulted, and living a much more dangerous life now than they did when Mubarak was in power. And, you know, I just find it difficult to believe, as easy as it is for us to make fun of our elected leaders in Washington, D.C. for being stupid, because they say they're going to do stuff, then it always seems to turn out the other way. I find it hard to believe that you rise to that level of political power by being an idiot.
I was just thinking that the people in Washington sometimes don't seem any brighter than the people who are on Wall Street protesting right now, which we'll get to later.
Yes.
But,
So my contention is if what they're saying they're going to do doesn't line up with what they're actually doing, maybe the real explanation is not that they're stupid, but that their real purpose, their real goal, the real agenda is a lot different from what they've been telling us all along. And we've said this before, too.
Gasp.
So I just find it really hard to believe that the people who got us into Iraq were so naive about sectarian politics in Iraq that they didn't see this coming when we entered Iraq in 2003. So, and here's the thing that really is astonishing to me, that the reason the Obama administration is pulling all of our troops out and is not even, according to the stories that I've read, and I still find this hard to believe, not even leaving troops there to man the super bases that we built, the ones that are big enough to be a whole and self-contained city. The Iraqis apparently are taking those off our hands as well. All of our troops are coming out of the country because the Iraqi government refused to grant blanket immunity to American soldiers inside Iraq. I mean, blanket immunity. Do whatever you want. You cannot be prosecuted under Iraqi law. Would we grant blanket immunity to any foreign soldier training inside the U.S.?
That little tidbit is being left out of most talking head discussions.
Yeah.
Why do you think? Because it's a Democrat in office.
Exactly.
And look, we don't side with either one. We think that there are bad points and good points to both political parties, both main political parties. But the problem is that if George W. Bush were in office doing this very same thing, mm-hmm. withdrawing from Iraq, and all of these same things happening, and for the reason that he would be withdrawing from Iraq, the mainstream media would be skewering him, saying that he was terrified of being accused of war crimes.
Yeah, you may well be right. It's also interesting, by the way, that this is being spun as a foreign policy victory for Barack Obama, that he is holding to the timetable that was originally negotiated by George W. Bush for withdrawing American troops. He's not doing anything other than what George W. Bush already.
But the
Republicans are now criticizing him for not sticking to the plan agreed to by George W. Bush.
What?
Okay, Barack Obama is claiming foreign policy victory, okay, for ending the war in Iraq. But all he's doing
is following the timetable by George W. Bush. But why are the Republicans then saying that he's not sticking to the timetable of George W. Bush?
Because it's leaving Iraq open, a ripe plum to be plucked by Iran.
Too late.
I know!
They've done been plucked.
Oh, it is so unbelievable.
Well, you know, the next thing that may be plucked is Bahrain.
With East Asia.
Bahrain is primarily Shia. Mm-hmm. And it's run by they're under the thumb of a ruling house, so to speak. That's essentially, you know, has puppet strings that go back to the House of Saud.
Right. The Saudis are and have provided military muscle for
and
the
speaking of the House of Saud.
Yeah.
Of course,
changes
the,
there
the
too.
Crown Prince, who was only 2 years younger than the current king.
Yeah. Crown Prince Sultan.
Like 83 instead of 85, or I don't know, something.
Yeah.
Like that.
He was in his 80s.
Yeah.
And had been ill for a while.
He passed away. And we'll have to see. There are opinions as to who will be named, but you know, sometimes these guys name the last person you'd think.
Yeah, the expected successor is actually on pretty good terms with the Wahhabists mm-hmm. in Saudi Arabia, which isn't necessarily a good thing for the West. But the Iranians make strange bedfellows. I mean, they hate Iran, and they're concerned about Iran's influence in the Gulf, especially with the U.S. pulling troops out of Iraq. Now we still have that massive embassy there, and we're still going to have 4,000 to 5,000 American contractors. I was looking for the alternate word to mercenaries, contractors there.
If we're not kicked out by the Shia.
That will remain to be seen.
Come on, we've had an embassy taken over before.
Yeah, but this one is extra tough, extra large. And I suspect that if we are calling the threat of the assassination of the Saudi ambassador on American soil an act of war, that if somehow American contractors in Iraq are killed and we can pin it on Iran, that will also be construed as an act of war. And we'll be back in Iraq so fast it'll make your head spin.
Well, watch for that to happen.
Yeah. So there's
back to King Abdullah.
Yeah.
You had said on a previous show that he imagines taking over the Middle East region, essentially recreating Assyria. Didn't you talk about that, how he wants to take over the area of Assyria and expand into northern, take over the Golan Heights and straddle the Jordan and take over that whole area? And that's one of the reasons that he is
That was an article that was at Debka.
Well, if that's true.
And use Jordan as sort of a proxy in that region. Right,
yes,
right.
If that is true, an aging King Abdullah has to be looking at this scenario and thinking, you know, if I want this in my lifetime, we better get going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was related to this the unrest in Syria.
Mm-hmm.
And the Saudis funneling arms to some of the rebels in eastern Syria, which borders on the western Iraq. And you're right. If American influence is pulled out of Iraq, that may make it more difficult for the Saudis to achieve their goal of breaking apart western Iraq and eastern Syria into a Saudi client state.
Well, it seems to
what
me.
A
I was looking
web.
At it. I know. I was looking to see if I had a little bug on my glasses because I saw. Well, it looked like a little bug. It seems to me that if the Middle East explodes the way it appears to be on the verge of doing, particularly with the November 11th, 11-11-11 possibility of a vote on up or down Palestinian question for the UN.
Yeah.
It seems to me that the United States and any countries involved need to be positioning their people now, which makes me wonder if Uganda, even though it is not technically on the coastline of the Horn of Africa, it is a nice staging area that's far away from the coastline of the Horn of Africa and may be considered a nice inland staging ground.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know if Tony Kail talked about that or not.
But. No, we really didn't get into the political stuff. We talked pretty much about the theological and spiritual aspects of the Lord's Resistance Army and, you know, its origins and you know, the impact that it's had in that region. It's a very resource-rich area, the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Uganda, if you're not familiar with the geology or the geography of the land there, Uganda is...
well, we'll post a map. Along with the show notes.
Right. It's kind of in the center. It's just to the west of Kenya. And Kenya is just to the west of Somalia.
It's just a jump to the left.
Yeah. And Somalia is the Horn of Africa. It's that little pointy part that sticks out into the Arabian
Sea.
Like a
rhinoceros
horn. Just across the Gulf there from Yemen. Ethiopia is due north of Kenya. And Sudan, South Sudan, is due north of Uganda.
And let's not forget, when President Obama was commenting on the death of Gaddafi, he essentially pointed at Yemen and said, "You're next."
Hmm. The bizarre thing about all this, and this gets back to the comments about, you know, stupidity in high places. We have seen the government turnover in Iraq, thanks to the United States taking out Saddam Hussein, in his place a likely Shia government that has has put Sharia law into its constitution. As we said before, we just created Iran's new best friend. We've seen a turnover of the government in Egypt and likely a more Islamic form of government with an increased influence of the Muslim Brotherhood taking hold there. Reports from Libya are still not real clear on what the new government there is going to look like, but it's apparent that there are at least elements that have been aligned with Al-Qaeda in the Transitional National Council. Tunisia, don't know what's going to happen there. We could wind up with a number of Islamic states where secular states were along the Mediterranean Sea.
Are all Islamist now.
Yeah. Really bizarre what we've accomplished there compared to what we said we were trying to accomplish, which was spreading democracy. In fact, what we've done is just kicked out the strongmen so that the Islamists could take over.
You know, we saw a wonderful interview with Candy Crowley talking with Joe Biden this morning.
Well, Joe is entertaining, if nothing else.
I know. We laughed and laughed.
He's the Democrats' answer to Ronald Reagan, really. I mean, in the sense that he gives good interview.
Yeah.
And he comes across as really just not quite...
There.
Yeah. Well, now let me retract that. Joe Biden likes to hear his voice. Ronald Reagan, I don't know, was quite that way. Reagan was a great interview because he was just a good speaker and a lot smarter than people gave him credit for.
He really was. And I think in the last months, if not the last year or so of his presidency, his Alzheimer's was beginning to take over. Mm-hmm. And so I think it did affect sometimes. He wasn't always as sharp as he had been in past years. He was a brilliant man when he was really thinking sharply. Joe Biden, I don't know.
Biden's just a glad hander. I mean, he's a career politician.
Yeah.
And he just loves to hear the sound of his voice. There are times when he speaks and answers questions where he should just shut up or say, "I don't know."
She was asking him questions, and Derek and I just looked at each other after each rambling answer and said, "Did he answer that?"
He's using lots of words, and he's saying nothing.
Typical politician.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. I mean, she was asking him about the
she was asking really good questions.
In particular about the economy and the 2012 election. And he said, well, people have a choice to make as to whether we can present the best plan or the other team will have the best plan. And she said, so that it's essentially a referendum on your economic policies. Well, no, I don't think so. But I think people have to make a choice as to whether we'll present the best plan.
It's a referendum.
Yeah. Politician.
You know. And he talked about how the Republicans just weren't doing it for the jobs plan. And she essentially said, "You guys have had almost 3 years."
Yeah.
So what why'd you wait so long?
Yeah, and you guys were in control of both houses of Congress most of that time. So,
oh, yeah.
What's the deal?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, good news. He's leaving the door open on a presidential run in 2016. So there we go.
I can sleep tonight.
President Biden.
Not.
Biden 16. What else is going on?
Oh, gosh.
All right. U.S., France, and Somalia. We got Libya liberated. Yay. That was just really repugnant. The video that was shown of
the
bloody.
That was
wounded,
like a snuff film.
It was all but a snuff film, yeah.
Because I do think that if you watched the entire raw video that was shot on the portable, I don't know if it was an iPhone or not, but it looked to me like he died. On that film.
Yeah.
He was clearly alive and walking with help. Mm-hmm. And then the very end of the film, he was clearly dead.
That's how it appeared.
Yeah.
Now, the claim is that he died in the ambulance on the way back to Misrata, but
no.
Don't know.
Now, he did have blood coming out of the left side of his head, but in the photos where he's clearly dead, he has a bullet hole in the right side of his skull. Now, I know that...
And one in the middle of his chest.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, caught in the crossfire, but just some suspiciously accurate shots in that crossfire. That was disturbing to see.
I really don't want to see anybody die. I really don't. I know we all have an expiration date. We've talked about this many times. We're all going to die, or we're all going to go with Christ in the rapture.
Mm-hmm.
We shall not all, sleep. We shall all be changed. I just hate to see anybody die, especially when it's very dubious that this person knows Christ when he or she dies. Gaddafi, I have a feeling, is in hell now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sadly, a lot of people went with him.
Yes.
Because the fighting there. And the fighting was encouraged and supported by supposedly Western nations and the United States, sort of leading from behind, although we were providing actual firepower. In the early days of the fighting that began back
in March. He's really good at leading from behind, isn't he?
Yeah, which, again, is being spun by his supporters as foreign policy victory. So, well, that's great. Mubarak, did Mubarak actually die, or is he still just being...
No, I think he's still alive.
Okay.
He's still technically on trial. His health is very poor.
Yeah. So Mubarak gone. The guy in Tunisia gone. Gaddafi gone, the Yemeni president next, and Assad, listening to Hillary Clinton, could well be in the crosshairs.
Hillary Clinton, for goodness sake, how heartless. I'm sorry, but her comment about Gaddafi, we came, we saw, he died.
Yeah, that is cold. That is cold.
And Joe Biden says that's the formula.
Okay. Well,
we're going to go in, we're going to see what's going on, and we're going to do some killing.
Now, just bear in mind... And we're not spinning this as a Republican-Democratic thing, because certainly the United States has a long history of going in places. I mean, going back, 90 years when General Smedley Butler of the Marine Corps wrote his book, War is a Racket. The U.S. was sending troops into Caribbean and Latin American nations on behalf of, United Fruit or whatever, American corporations that had interests there. They were threatened by locals who didn't want, these foreigners coming in and basically taking their stuff.
How dare they not want us to come in and rape and pillage
exactly.
the country?
And apparently now the United States has adopted a policy of, what are they calling it, responsibility to protect. We decide somebody needs some protecting someplace, and so we go send, advisors first.
You can lose your right as a sovereign nation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If we decide that you should lose your right. Mm-hmm. To be a sovereign nation.
Yeah, I think, in plain speak, this is the he needed killing doctrine.
This is the most absurd doctrine I've ever heard. I mean, this is hegemony in its worst form. We want to remake you in our pattern because our pattern is the best pattern. And we get to decide who gets to stay in office and who doesn't.
Right. And that's what they're telling us. They want to remake these nations in our pattern. But as we've said before, we can't expect them to adopt our pattern when their cultural makeup is completely different from ours.
Well, what's hilarious is we've got essentially a socialist in office who's trying to start democracy in other countries.
Well, again, I don't believe that that's the actual goal. That's what they're telling us.
Agreed.
Right. So and we're just putting this out there again, not as a Republican Democrat thing, because we're not carrying any water for the GOP. It's just as Christians, we need to stand up and recognize and speak out against these things that our government is doing. We're not counseling rebellion against the government. We're just saying, look, we have to recognize when our government is doing things that violate Christian principles. And we've got a government now that is claiming the right to not only take out foreign heads of state when they annoy us or get in the way of business, but American citizens that mm-hmm. it deems a threat. The story came out this past week, well, actually a couple of weeks ago, secret panel that advises the president and basically draws up hit lists for the president to sign off on. And that's how they decided that Anwar al-Awlaki and Samir Khan, and apparently now al-Awlaki's son was also killed by a drone. So that would make three mm-hmm. American citizens.
Well, and there's a question that Gaddafi's other son may be dead as well.
He had a number of sons. I think the one that there's still some question whether he might be alive is the so-called playboy son, Saif. There was a report that he'd been captured.
Well, there was one
alive.
that was killed the same day that Gaddafi
right,
died.
Right, right. So we're living in a nation that is claiming, we Americans are living in a nation that claims the right to just go essentially assassinate anybody that it feels is in the way, using this so-called responsibility to protect doctrine. And it's under that doctrine that we've sent our advisors, special forces, to Uganda. So, and there may be more to that story as well. Do you want to dig into that now or just?
Well, yeah, I just want to say that as a Christian, it's really important for each one of us to take a hard look at our own country, you know, no matter what country you live in, because the truth is that the world is run by the enemy. Mm-hmm. The yeah. spiritual enemy is in charge of the nations of this world. The only nation that is not run by a spiritual fallen angel is Israel. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't mean Israel does everything perfectly. They don't. For goodness sake, they have defied and fought against the rules that God placed in the Old Testament, gave them the rules to live by. And they have just, they've worshiped false idols. They have mm-hmm. done everything in their, but each time they have rebelled against him, God has brought persecution upon them mm-hmm. to try to get them to turn back to him. It doesn't matter. They're still not, and a fallen angel is not in charge of the nation of Israel. That is a fact. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Their king, their God, their ruler is Jehovah.
That's right. That's right. I mean, we need to just look at the Bible and remember that, as you rightly point out, all through the history of the Old Testament, we see the nation of Israel, God's chosen people, turning away from him again and again. So while we as Christians support Israel, we cannot assume that now they are following God's will, and that everything Israel does is God's will.
Exactly, exactly. It's clear when you look at the book of where'd he go?
Well, he's still under the blanket. Sam just certainly let out with a really loud snore.
No, that was my foot.
Oh, okay. I thought that was Sam.
I wondered why you looked over at him. Yeah. It's clear in biblical prophecy that God still has a lot of chastisement to do with the nation mm-hmm. of Israel, and clearly it will result in the remnant, the spiritual remnant. They will turn back to God, mm-hmm. and they will be purified, and they will be glorified, and they will realize that Jesus Christ is their Savior. I think that's wonderful. There's so much promise in the nation of Israel. But right now, there are a lot of things going on that God surely does not approve of, and that is the same for every nation of this earth. And for us as Christians to assume just because we live in a Western nation that has, frankly, been blessed, despite mm-hmm. what we do, despite who's really in charge, that we've allowed to be in charge, that that somehow we are different, and therefore we have some sort of of
right and responsibility.
Responsibility to go and make everybody in our image.
Change the world according to our plan. Yeah, speaking of Israel, by the way, just to go there for a second, Gilad Shalit, the soldier who was kidnapped just before, well, several months before. Ariel Sharon fell into a coma, so this would have been back in 2005.
About 5 years ago.
Almost 6 years.
He
was finally returned home, but Israel had to return.
Well, they promised over 1,000.
1,000. They've released 450 so far, and there's supposed to be another 570 some odd that will be released at some future date, a few months down the road. And just pray that these guys, some of whom have been convicted of multiple murders, don't return to their killing ways. I just don't see that having a good end.
No.
Certainly seemed, I mean, while we're glad that Shalit is still alive, he looked pretty malnourished, but the fact that he was still alive is wonderful. The fact that he was able to return home after such a long period of captivity is wonderful. But what signal does it send to Hamas or Hezbollah or Fatah or whomever that if we capture one Israeli soldier, we can get 1,000 of our guys out of jail?
Well, exactly. Let's take a look at that sort of behavior, because for decades now, Israel has been given concession after concession after concession.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'll give you land back. We'll get out of your villages. We'll do this. We'll do that. We'll send prisoners back. I know that Israel has a lot of wonderful firepower. They have wonderful soldiers. But the truth is, teeny-weeny Israel has stood up against all of these surrounding nations that would love to take them out and just keep saying they want them out. The only reason Israel is still there is because they are under the protection of Jehovah God.
Yeah.
That is the only reason. And I would say that if you don't believe in Jesus Christ as your Savior, if you don't believe the Bible, good heavens, Israel is an example of the miracle that God gives us every day by the fact that Israel hasn't been blown off the map.
How many other people groups that were essentially destroyed as a nation state 2,000 years ago, like, you know, well, where are the Edomites? Where are the Moabites? I mean, where is their nation today? You know, can we even identify their people group, the Ammonites? Can we actually point to somebody today and say, oh, yeah, he's Nabataean? You know, all of these people groups that we saw in the Old Testament, the Hittites,
mm-hmm.
You know, where
all
are they
ites.
Today? All those ites that we see in the Bible, those nations were essentially destroyed in the centuries prior to the birth of Christ, with the Assyrian Empire and the Babylonian Empire and then the Greeks coming and then the Romans coming.
Mm-hmm.
They essentially wiped out, assimilated, redistributed all of these people groups. And then the Jews eventually were moved out of their land after AD 70 when after they rebelled against Rome and were destroyed. And yet for 2,000 years they maintained an identity and were able to reconstitute the nation state of Israel. That in itself is nothing short of a miracle.
That's right. That is right. I do think that back to this notion of the United States and our current policies overseas, I think that it's a miracle that we're still here, to be honest with you, the way we've been behaving lately. I think we're still here, and we still have not totally disintegrated as a nation economically, is because we are still technically supporting Israel.
Mm.
If that goes
right
out the window, we're toast.
Well, yeah. And again, that gets back to the conversation I had with John McTernan a couple of weeks ago on as America has done to Israel. And again, still planning a follow-up discussion with him about that to dig into some of those questions. Again, the tying of God's judgment to to specific actions. So look forward to continuing that discussion. But yeah, the fact that we're still here economically is certainly not through lack of trying to tear apart the system. I mean, with what the bankers did recently, California now instituting its own cap and trade policy, $500 million here to a company like Solyndra, another $500 million. This I know that spiritually this is like of no consequence, but it just drives me nuts looking at stuff like this that slipped past us without recognizing it, that while Solyndra was getting $500 million to build green technology that nobody wanted, a car company called Fisker got about $500 million because it's tied to Al Gore. He's one of the backers. And what is Fisker going to build? Well, they're going to build a new electric car. That's great. How many miles can this car go on a single charge? About 20. That's real practical. What's the price tag of this Fisker car? About $89,000. Bare for the base model. And it's being built in Finland because they say they couldn't find a place in the United States.
And it weighs a ton.
It weighs 2.5 tons.
Oh, 2.5 tons.
The car weighs over 5,000 pounds because of all the batteries it's got in there. Now, it will go 0 to 60 in about 6.5 seconds, which is pretty slick. I mean, that's pretty quick. Not race car fast, but it's pretty fast.
Woe to anybody it hits.
Yeah, because you've got this car zipping up on you in 6.5 seconds and making
it's
no
like
noise.
A tank going that fast.
And making no noise because it's an electric engine. I mean, at least, you know, a Corvette coming at you, you've got that coming at you. You can move out of the way because you've got a few seconds of sound warning you that something, you know, quick this way comes. But, I mean, this is just so ridiculous. It is unbelievable. And I look for Fisker to announce that it's going out of business within the next couple of years. And, of course, it's going to take about a half a billion U.S. taxpayer dollars with it when it goes down the drain. I mean, the goal is to build an energy efficient car, but it's a car that like 1% of the population can afford, and none of them are going to want it anyway because you can only drive 20 miles without a charge. And once you kick the battery on or the backup gasoline engine on, the miles per gallon, according to the EPA, is 20.
Oh, gosh.
The company car I've got gets 33 on average. It is
33,
so,
eh?
Yes, 33. Mm. Ludicrous. Ludicrous.
Well, you know, there are lots of people mad at the way the country is just dishing out money to special interest groups left and right, including the people who are occupying Wall Street. And there's a story out about them that I just love. It's at the New York Post today. And it's called They Want a Slice of the Occupy, P-I-E. And it's all about special interest groups within the Occupy Wall Streets. And I say they're working groups is what they call themselves. And they're groups that are assigned to take, you know, a task needed like laundering clothes and things like that of all these people who are living out in the middle of people's yards and in a park and who knows where else. People that, frankly, I'm glad they're not living on my street. Let's
sure.
put it that way.
Yeah.
These groups need money. Well, they're panhandling in order to get it. So the people of New York are having to pay these people to occupy these, you know, these park benches and in their little tents. Well, all the money goes to the finance committee.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay.
Occupy Wall Street has a finance committee, and they have nearly $500,000 in the bank.
$500,000
half
for these products?
$500,000.
Where did they get that money?
In the bank.
Oh, they put it into a bank.
It's in the bank.
That's
right. And apparently, some of these working groups are getting kind of cheesed because they go around panhandling and collecting the money. And then they give nearly all of the money to this finance committee. And when they go to the finance committee and ask for some change so they can help, take care of their little job within their group, the finance committee says, well, you'll have to fill out this paperwork. In other words, apply for the loan. They offered the guy $150. He says, what can I do with $150? We have 3 tons of wet laundry. How can I get that done? That's a lot of change.
That's bizarre. $500,000 fight at Zuccotti. We'll definitely have to put a link to this in the show notes at PIDradio.com. It is
a huge flat screen TV went up at Zuccotti Park for a movie night and pajama party with popcorn. Organizers hoped it would attract new recruits, it says, even as some long-timers complained that the movement was just getting too diffuse after yesterday's lackluster showing at a police brutality event in Union Square that barely attracted 50 participants. Oh, we'd rather go to the movie night, dude. You know. Good heavens. This is the craziest thing. And there is a YouTube video that we'll link to that I had Derek watch before we started doing tonight's show. And in the YouTube video, it's a Sharpie ad.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about self-expression
yeah.
and the right to say what you really feel.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and about 10 seconds in.
About 11, 12 seconds in, yeah. There's a big banner that has been drawn with Sharpies that says, stop protesting.
Yeah, kind of funny meme there that they've inserted into the latest ads from Sharpies. One of the other problems they're having there at the Occupy event is crime. They're having some trouble there. Some of the drummers there that were at the park, Zuccotti Park, wanted money from the finance committee to replace drums that were vandalized. They've had incidents of rape that have been or accusations
yeah,
of rape
because
that have been
apparently
leveled.
You're assigned to a tent. You don't mm-hmm. get to be in there with somebody you necessarily know.
Right, right. There was a woman who claimed that she was raped by a guy who was assigned to share a tent with her. She didn't know the guy, and she claims she was sexually assaulted. So this is a growing problem in these cities that have sprung up around here. Thankfully, we've not seen, you know, Occupy Mattoon or Occupy Charleston yet.
Next, we're going to see the OWS Bank.
Yes, the Occupy Wall Street Bank.
Yeah.
Founded by the Finance Committee. So in the United States here, we are investing in new technology. The government is called FAST, which is Future Attribute Screening Technology. If you've seen the movie, the Tom Cruise movie, Minority Report, you basically have an idea of what this is about. We've talked about this from time to time on PID Radio. Government is using cameras and computer technology, facial recognition technology, and also biometric data like breathing patterns, eye movements, blink rate, and changes in body heat to assess an individual's likelihood to commit a crime. Watch for this system, this FAST program, to appear at an airport near you. I suspect that's going to be used to supplement the full body scanners. We'll probably see it popping up at other places like shopping malls.
I'd say that's
government
entirely
buildings.
Possible.
Yeah, yeah.
We're hurtling toward a very disturbing future.
Right. I
would guess that if they find somebody who is about to breach the law, that they may just send out the robotic cheetah to hunt them down.
The robotic cheetah.
The robotic cheetah. DARPA is developing a robotic cheetah. They already have a robotic mule, which carries all sorts of equipment in you know, heavy terrain, rather than having men and women carry it, which is, I think, a great idea. It's kind of creepy looking. It's essentially a big skid that has four creepy-looking robotic legs.
I've seen things like that on YouTube.
Yeah. Well, this is a robotic cheetah, and it is supposed to – it looks like a cheetah, and it will just go and go and go and track you down and kill you.
Huh. So we're creating the Cylons.
We are going into Cylons and Terminator territory.
Yeah.
It is not a happy future that is showing up. But the nice thing to remember, even though we talk about these things, is our Lord Jesus Christ is still King of the universe.
Amen.
He is in charge.
Yeah. Let's see. You're clicking through the things that I'd highlighted to talk about. Well, let me jump back now to this deployment of military advisors to Uganda. So we're about 40 minutes into the program here. There's a lot going on here. And maybe while I'm doing this, Google oil and Uganda just to get my facts straight there.
Well, while you are looking that up, just let me bring up something else that's happened in Louisiana.
Okay.
There is a new law down there. It's just been passed by the Congress of Louisiana that says that if you purchase anything at a garage sale, any secondhand merchandise at a garage sale or a flea market or a secondhand store or a pawn shop or, you know, in fact, maybe pawn shop is actually ruled out. But anyway, secondhand merchandise, you have to pay either a check, a money order, or use plastic. You may not purchase it with cash. You may not buy it with cash. In other words, if you go to my garage sale, I have to insist that you pay in cash.
Mm-hmm.
If I go to your garage sale, I have to pay in cash. But it's more than that. They not only have to pay in cash, but the person who is in charge of the garage...
No, they cannot pay in cash.
Sorry. Not only can they not pay in cash, they have to use a check, money order, or plastic, which means that if I have a garage sale, I have to either take a check that will bounce, I have to insist that you go get a money order for the exact amount, which I then have to go and I have to cash, or I have to have a visa or some kind of ability to take plastic, which is crazy. But not only do you are you not allowed to pay in cash or buy with cash, if you come to my secondhand merchandise store and you're paying your cash, I have to get your name, all your vital information so you can be tracked down, and I have to take a look and see what you drove in, and I have to get your tag number.
Yeah, it's apparently intended to assist law enforcement on
the secondhand metals market.
Secondhand metals or perhaps used firearms or other things like that. But it is crazy.
You go buy baby clothes at the garage sale down the corner.
And you have to pay with...
You have to pay with a check, a money order,
debit card,
plastic.
Something like that. And you know, how many secondhand... Well, I mean, secondhand shops, I suppose. You know, we go to a resale shop here in town, and they will take a debit card.
They
so
do,
we can do that.
But honestly... So,
who would a garage sale is going to be set up to take, you know, plastic?
You're not. You're not. And honestly, I think that there are a lot of flea markets. They do a lot of cash
business.
Yes,
absolutely. And you know, when you look on that Federal Reserve note in your wallet, it says this note is legal tender for all debts, public and private.
Yes!
Federal Reserve note, all debts, public and private, which means this law is probably going to be challenged in court and lose.
Well, I hope it does, because it will be the model for the rest of the country, because we're all going cashless and we all know it.
Yeah, yeah. Mark in the hand or forehead.
You
That'd be really convenient.
You may not buy or sell mm-hmm. without that mark in the hand or the forehead.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's see. The deployment of American forces to Iraq. Advisors to Iraq. I keep saying forces. Yeah. History would indicate that those guys will eventually be engaged in something that will require them to shoot back. The area that in which the Lord's Resistance Army is active is not limited to Uganda. It is Uganda, South Sudan, and the Democratic Republic of Congo. Those three nations sort of come together there a little northwest of Lake Victoria. It is not well known, but Uganda recently, just within the last couple of years, has discovered a fair amount of oil in the Rift Valley that runs through northern Uganda. The reserves, according to an article at the Daily Monitor, are assumed to be fairly lucrative. They're still doing some research on the feasibility, and they may not get the final report until July of 2012. So I don't know that we can pin this all on oil. I'm just trying to figure out and get a sense for what is the real reason. And the reason I ask
they're
the question.
They're abundant in copper.
Copper. There are other natural resources in Uganda, also in Congo and Kenya. I do know that there are Western oil companies that are beginning to invest in Uganda and Kenya where they had not in years past. And this oil discovery, or the potential oil discovery, is not quite 2 years old. It was only 2009 that the first reports started coming out that Uganda might have upwards of 2 billion barrels in reserves. And that's not a huge amount in comparison to what Saudi Arabia's got, or even what the United States has in the shale deposits of western North Dakota. I mean, I just read a story the other day that Williston, North Dakota, which I visited, my grandparents had a farm in North Dakota, there's such a boom there that oil workers who have signed contracts for six-figure annual salaries are having to sleep in their cars at the local Walmart parking lot because there are no housing units in Williston, North Dakota.
Can't Warren Buffett send them a few trailers?
All the trailers left over from Hurricane Katrina, perhaps. Yeah. So
I'd rather sleep in my car.
Yeah, me too. So the question is, though, why is Joseph Kony and the Lord's Resistance Army now considered such a threat? Now, what I've learned from Tony Kale, who's researched this group for quite a bit, for quite a while, as part of his research into the witch hunts of Africa. You want to get rid of somebody, accuse them of being a witch. And the response is usually extreme, or very often extreme. And people have been killed simply because they've been accused of being a witch, even children. Kony took over a group that was originally formed by a woman, founded by a woman named Alice Ouma, who was apparently inhabited by three spirits, one of whom was called Laquena, and Laquena was the dominant spirit, the personality of Alice when she was speaking in the voice of this spirit became known as Alice Laquena. Laquena was supposed to be a deceased Italian military officer. She led a movement, sort of a modern-day African Joan of Arc, a movement of the Acholi tribe. The Acholi tribe lives in northern Uganda and southern Sudan, kind of straddles the border like the Kurds do between Turkey, Iraq, mm-hmm. and Iran. Mm-hmm. And they were resisting the government of Milton Obote. Milton Obote became president of Uganda after Idi Amin was deposed.
Was it Obote or Mbote?
Obote. O-B-O-T-E. Oh. Obote was overthrown. His rule was overthrown in a coup d'etat in July of 1985, led by a man named Tito Okello. Okello was a member of the Acholi tribe, of which Alice and her movement were part of the same tribe. Okello only lasted until January of 1986, when President Museveni took over, Yoweri Museveni, who was at the head of the National Resistance Army. So again, another coup d'etat led this time by Museveni, who was not an Acholi. Alice Aouma's movement marched on the capital of Kampala, and actually, like Joan of Arc's, you know, French army, scored some pretty spectacular successes. And they would perform rituals, according to Tony Cale. They would daub themselves with oil and like vegetable oil and animal blood, and that would, they believe, make them impervious to bullets. Apparently, it didn't do quite as well against artillery, and so they were defeated. And Alice left the country. She lived out her life at a refugee camp in Kenya.
So what lord is this Revolutionary Army worshiping?
Lord of the Flies, I would presume. Joseph Kony, who had tried to make himself part of the movement when Alice Aouma was still in charge, and she kind of sent him away in disgrace, came back and kind of gathered up the remnants of her movement, dubbed it the Lord's Resistance Army, I guess in opposition to the National Resistance Army, headed by Museveni, who is still the president of Uganda 25 years later. And Kony has been kind of leading this guerrilla resistance in the bush for the last 25 years or thereabouts. He's been accused, and according to Tony Cale, accurately accused of, or rightfully accused of, forcibly impressing children into his army, of committing multiple murders and rapes. According to a group called the Lord's Resistance Army Crisis Tracker, the LRA Crisis Tracker, and the website is lracrisistracker.com. Since December of 2009, they're responsible for nearly 1,000 civilian deaths and about 1,800 abductions. And that's, again, that's just within the last 2 years. Bear in mind, he's been operating out there in the bush since about 1987 or 88. Northern Uganda, southern Sudan, and northeastern Congo. So the question is, if Kony and the Lord's Resistance Army have been killing thousands and killing, abducting, raping thousands of people for over 20 years, why now in October of 2011 is it so important that we send military advisors to those nations to try to track and hunt this guy down? Why, if this guy has been... He was indicted by the International Criminal Court in 2005. In fact, interestingly enough, the indictments were issued almost 5 years ago to the day. The chief prosecutor of the ICC released details on Kony's indictment on October 13th, 10/13 of 2005.
Oh, that's interesting.
There are 33 charges filed against Kony. 12 counts, crimes against humanity, include murder, enslavement, sexual enslavement, and rape. The other 21 counts, war crimes, murder, cruel treatment of civilians, intentionally directing attacks against civilian population, et cetera, et cetera. So the ICC, which the United States does not recognize, by the way, has had charges filed against this guy for 6 years, not five, 6 years. It was 2005. Again, I ask, why now in 2011 is it suddenly so important that we send special forces as military advisors to Uganda?
I don't know, but it may have. I pray that it has nothing to do with the fact that on 11/9/11, the first ever national, what is it called? The National Emergency Alert System will be activated.
Mm.
The first ever national
test. So not just a local test.
Exactly. We see them locally all the time.
Right.
Radio, television. This is the first ever national EAS system. EAS, sorry, that's redundant, test ever.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a system that is, the national system, is under the purview of the President of the United States. He can activate that system anytime he wants. And it's going to be tested at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on November the 9th, 11/9/11.
Yeah.
So it's 9/11
forwards and backwards.
Exactly,
yeah.
Forwards and backwards. I'm going to bring
there's one other thing I wanted to mention before we left the topic of Uganda. We touched on this last
week. I'm about
to
go back to it.
Oh, okay. All right, Mom.
Well,
carry on.
What I'm about to say is just an aside. I'm not making any kind of an implication here. I'm just telling you, I think this is interesting, that Barack Obama is sending these people in to essentially advise ways to resist this Lord's Resistance Army. helping the incumbent president. When in fact, the Luo tribe, of which Barack Obama is supposed to be a descendant, mm-hmm. he's a part of the Luo tribe, the Acholi is one of the clans of the Luo tribe.
Oh, is it?
Yes. They all speak Luo.
I did not know that. That's an interesting spin on
things. I just found that out. I just thought, well, I'll just see if they're related in any way. And sure enough, they are.
How interesting. Well, we touched on this last week. I just want to bring this up again as another thing to consider here as we try to make sense of it. And I haven't made sense of it yet. I'm just bringing these facts in so we can kind of stir this up and discuss this at the PID Radio Cafe at Facebook. President Museveni of Uganda, who's been in power for 25 years, supported by the United States and many European governments, has been described by Doug Coe of The Fellowship or The Family, which was the subject of Jeff Charlotte's book, The Family, subject of some great investigative work by...
And someone you interviewed.
Yes,
so
right.
You can go and maybe you can link to that in the show notes, mm-hmm. or you can go and search at PIDradio.com.
Right. And there's just some great investigative work by Constance Cumby, who found out that The Family is tied through one of its founders, Paul N. Temple, to the Institute of Noetic Sciences, which is the group that is using science to try to contact the spirit realm, the supernatural realm, which is really bizarre because one of the fellows on the board at the Institute of Noetic Sciences is Van Jones, who was the green jobs czar for President Obama before he got run out of Washington, D.C. by Glenn Beck. What a tangled web.
It's
anyway,
a crazy world.
Doug Coe of The Family described President Yoweri Museveni as the family's key man in Africa. And in 2009, at the behest of a bill supported by President Museveni, the Anti-Homosexuality Bill of 2009, they penalized anyone who, quote, attempts to commit the offense, end quote, of homosexual sex with up to 7 years in jail. If a person committed a forcible rape and was found to be HIV positive, a forcible homosexual rape and was HIV positive, they can be executed under this bill. And this is a guy who, again, has been supported by some very powerful forces inside the United States, not just in the government, but the guy behind the call, Lou Engel, mm-hmm. went over to Uganda when this bill was being debated over there and caught some flack for it because, the whole... You know, the death penalty aspect of it, apparently, he claims he was unaware of, and he may have been. But I don't want to play up this whole aspect of it. But it seems that his opposition to homosexuality and the claim that he's an evangelical Christian are good enough for Doug Coe and the family and the powerful American politicians who kind of orbit around the family to earn their support. In other words, as long as he's opposed to these, he supports us on these certain social policies, then he's our guy. And so there's that aspect to consider, too, but the relationship between the United States and Uganda, the government of President Museveni, who is, the key ally of the family.
He's our guy.
Yeah. And is that the reason that President Obama now feels compelled to send troops there?
I don't know.
Or,
this world. Hmm.
Yeah, as WorldNet Daily has claimed, suggested, is it just simply that the wealthy George Soros has buddies who are invested in some of the oil exploration ventures in Uganda?
Well,
don't know.
I guess
that
we'll find out as things play out.
Yes.
Now, don't forget, put it on your calendar on November the 9th at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for about 3 minutes, all broadcasting, radio, television, perhaps even internet. I don't know. They're all going to be taken over by this national emergency alert system.
Because every emergency alert test that you've ever heard has been done by the individual station that you're listening to. We've got broadcast experience and professional radio.
It caused Sam to go running underneath that desk.
Duck and cover. He's hiding under the desk just like he was trained. Good boy, Sam.
Good boy, Sam.
And then, of course, as you mentioned,
people
on
are crazy.
11-11-11 is the vote on Palestine.
It's
potentially
possible. It's the very first date that they might do it. So we'll see if it gets postponed. Because right now, Palestinians don't have the votes. They know it. So they may want to postpone it further. But we'll see.
So, well, that is just some of the things to watch for as we go forward.
Well, next weekend is adventures. Halloween weekend. Monday is the 31st of October.
That's
Halloween
right.
weekend. Halloween, excuse me, Halloween night. My voice is starting to go again. You are interviewing somebody that's going, you told me would be a great guest for Halloween.
Yeah, and spoke to him recently, Dr. Judd Burton.
But that's right.
He's
that's
got
right.
an online learning institute that is devoted to the spirit realm, the supernatural realm, and you know, some of the classes that he would teach or that he's planning to teach. We'll get into topics that we discuss often on PID Radio and A View from the Bunker. You know, giantology, practical demonology, vampirism, lycanthropology.
Sign up now.
Yeah. And the coursework, the cost, as I understand it, will be very reasonable, as it was with Dr. Mike Heiser's institute. So we'll talk about that, get into specifics, some of the classes that he will have available. And we may touch on the topic of Halloween again, even though we recently discussed it. You know, this is an opportunity to get into the subject with somebody who studies it from a scholar's perspective and the perspective of a Christian scholar, which is really good because it gives us solid information to arm ourselves when we, confront these topics in conversation. You know, many of us know people that we work with who are fascinated with the supernatural realm. You know, they watch every episode of Ghost Hunters on TV and the Travel Channel and the History Channel and, you know, of course, all the shows with Giorgio Crazy Hair Guy. And they have questions. And as Christians, we should be prepared with answers, but answers that are that are aligned with what we know to be scripturally true, because ultimately, as L.A. Marzulli says, that's the guidebook to the supernatural.
Amen. Amen. Well, in the meantime, look out for the Tony Kale interview that will be posted this evening. If you haven't already listened to it, please make sure you do it, vftb.net. Let's see, what else do we need to talk about? Oh, I noticed that at our PID TV account over at YouTube that there were a few people who had posted where had we gone?
Oh, yeah.
You're wondering why we hadn't done any recently. It's because I've been so sick. I've been sick for almost a month.
Yeah, better part of 3 weeks.
I am really getting tired of being sick.
But we'll be back soon with some new vid, especially if, you know, breaking news. It's kind of neat to be able to do something that we can just put together in 5 minutes or
exactly.
so and have it uploaded directly
exactly.
to YouTube.
So if something really does break, we'll try to fix it. And since we're not very good at fixing it, we'll just go on and do a PID TV about it. But we hope to be back soon. Just, you know, my ears have been closed. I'm still coughing a little bit. Yeah, but anyway, I'm getting better because people are praying for me, and I thank the Lord for it.
Amen to that. And until next time, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content, copyright Gilbert House, and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear, a better day is coming.